Welcome in to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archived shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com. So check it out right there, VeritasMedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you today?
Doing really good.
Good, good, good. We got a great show once again lined up.
Yes, we do. Hopefully, we'll have Dr. Brian Tyson on. He is an urgent care physician out in California and was supposed to be on at the top of the hour here, but he got delayed. So hopefully, he'll call in here a little bit. If not, we'll get him on later. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to bring in Dr. Ben Marble from MyFreeDoctor.com. It's a telemedicine group that was just organized during the pandemic because there were not enough physicians taking care of these patients as outpatients. You know, we're trying to keep the hospitals empty, and there's a great way to do that if people follow the protocols that have been established and published, but for some reason we're having trouble getting that done across the country. So Dr. Ben Marble took up the call, but we'll visit with him at the bottom of the hour. So until Dr. Tyson calls, if he's able to, I just want to say I'm bringing these guys on. We had Dr. Bartlett last week, Dr. Peter McCullough prior to that. Hopefully we'll get Dr. Stella Manuel on. I think she told me between 700 and 1,000 patients a day her telemedicine service is doing. She has multiple doctors and nurse practices.
Who do you contact when you need a concern?
Yeah.
And the point of this is the boots on the ground, the doctors on the front line, the ones that have been treating patients this entire time for 18 months. Not only is there published studies and published data, Vladimir Zelenko, I know he's been given a lot of interviews lately. He's the doctor, family practice doctor up in New York, who really was one of the first ones, if not the first one, to start using hydroxychloroquine. He's the one that advised President Trump to use hydroxychloroquine.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the front line treating these high-risk patients since day one, and he's been very, very vocal lately. He's reduced hospitalization mortality up in the upper 99%, I think, is what I heard him quoting on the last interview I listened to. And the word's just still, unfortunately, not getting out. There's so many patients contacting us from around the country asking for help. Desperate asking for help. So these doctors have been seeing high volume. Of course, we're treating patients here in Lubbock locally. And I just want to remind everybody, the Delta variant, depending on what study you're looking at, it's 1/7 the mortality rate to maybe 4 times as less the mortality rate than the original. Again, depending on what study you look at. So we don't need to panic. We don't need to be afraid. If you're watching some news program that's using fear, or any healthcare authority that's using fear when it comes to Delta variant, I strongly recommend you turn that off. We should never let the spirit of fear drive us. So that 4 times less deadly statistic is even without the therapies that we're going to talk about today, the outpatient therapies that Dr. McCullough and Dr. Bartlett talked about that Dr. Tyson's been using. So Dr. Tyson is in Imperial Valley, the All Valley Urgent Care Centers down there near the border, right on the border. So a lot of high-risk patients. We got to remember standard Americans are high-risk, just by definition, when 70% of our population is overweight or obese, metabolically fit, only 12% of us, probably less than that now. That data is 4 or 5 years old. So we're probably less than 10% metabolically fit. So basically, Americans are sitting ducks. I had someone contact me this weekend with a friend in the ICU on the ventilator, 30 years old, but he's morbidly obese and diabetic and all these risk factors. So, yeah, we're sitting ducks. But even with that, it's a less deadly strain. And that's without therapy. And the therapy I'm talking about, you can go to aapsonline.org. And there's right on the front page a home treatment guide. Print it off and use it. There are some prescription medicines on there, too, for if you're sicker, further down the road of symptomatically, then take it to your doctor. Give it to him. the Critical Care Consortium. That's FLCCC.net. There's protocols on there for prophylaxis, for outpatient therapy, for in-hospital therapy. So they're there. They've been, doctors are using them. We've used them. All these doctors are using them with great success. So we don't need to be scared. You know, I tell my colleagues who still don't understand, why isn't the CDC, NIH, and all the local public health authorities, why aren't all the commercials, why isn't the news media putting all these doctors on and putting these, blasting these protocols, dropping leaflets from the sky, putting them in everyone's mailbox?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a whole different discussion. What's the motivation behind the suppression of truth? You know, but I tell these doctors, hey, our hospitals would be overrun and our ICUs would be overrun with asthmatics if the pediatricians and family practice doctors quit giving asthmatic kids steroids and albuterol. If we told an asthmatic exacerbation walking in our door to just go home until your oxygen level's in the 80s and you're blue and you can't breathe and then go to the ER, we'd be overrun. It's really that simple. There are some amazing therapies that work great. If you're high risk, you definitely need them. And if you're low risk, you probably don't, but it's fine to take them if you want to. So I can't get into the motivation behind the what, why, and how and all that, but it is what it is. So at the bottom of there, like I said, we'll bring in Dr. Ben Marwell. He's been nominated, by the way, for Nobel Peace Prize for what he's done. All for free, myfreedoctor.com. But we'll talk about that after the break. I got to go through. We have to. We got to go into the vaccine. It's just unbelievable. Actually, after 18 months, it is believable. And I'm just going to call this out. It's not just Texas Tech. It's Baylor. It's all these universities. I've been sent propaganda material from lots of different universities. This one just happens to be the last one I've received, so I'm pulling it off. It's a flyer. Vaccine incentive program. Students could win free parking for a year, a free one-year rec center membership, scholarships, Texas Tech University dining bucks, campus store gift cards. And I'm telling you, I've seen this from multiple universities. Unbelievable. The coercion, the bribing, these kids that are impressionable, they don't know how to read data, and of course they're probably going to listen to the news or whatever on social media they're listening to when they're getting bombarded to enroll in a supposed to be voluntary, which it is, but man, the consequences if you don't volunteer are significant. But to force or coerce someone to volunteer for this experimental unproven medical therapy. And I just want to remind people, they've tried to do coronavirus vaccines for the last 20 years since SARS-CoV-1 and MERS and all that. All the animal models, and every time they tried it, it did not go well. Mostly from antibody-dependent enhancement, this ADE, where you get an exaggerated immune response. Yep, you make some antibodies after the shot, but this exaggerated immune response when you get exposed to the coronavirus again. That's historically. Now, could they have overcome that? Could they have figured out the loophole, the way around that? Maybe. But they haven't proven that yet. I'm going to read off some quotes here. I gave a talk in Anson. They asked me to come down and speak because the school there was coercing or highly encouraging everyone, even kids, to take this. So, here's a quote from Dr. Gert Vandenbosch. He's formerly of GlaxoSmithKline Biologicals and Novartis Vaccines and the Bill and Melinda Foundation vaccine program known as Gavi. So this is a scientist who works on vaccines, and he's pro-vaccine, obviously. He makes them. He's spent his career doing this, and he worked for Bill and Melinda Gates doing it. Quote, "This type of prophylaxis vaccine is completely inappropriate and even highly dangerous when used in mass vaccination campaigns during a viral pandemic. Unless I am scientifically proven wrong, it is difficult to understand how current human interventions will prevent circulating variants from turning into a wild monster." He goes on to say, quote, There can be no doubt that continued mass vaccination campaigns will enable new, more infectious viral variants to become increasingly dominant and ultimately result in a dramatic incline in new cases, despite enhanced vaccine coverage rates. There can be no doubt either that this situation will soon lead to complete resistance of circulating variants to the current vaccines. Guess when he said that? March of 2021.
Wow.
Talk about a crystal ball. I think, because that's exactly what we're seeing now. Mm-hmm. The top 13 most vaccinated countries have all had outbreak spikes immediately following the vaccine rollout, and the Delta variant's emerging just as he predicted. That's Dr. Gert VandenBosch, formerly GlaxoSmithKline and Novartis Vaccines and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So, could someone disagree with Dr. Boschi? I mean, he's probably top of his game, one of the world's leading authorities and experts. But yeah, I'm sure you could find someone to disagree. But with that prediction from March of 2021 and now seeing where we're at now, at the very, 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 very minimum, there needs to be robust debate. And these kids need to be informed that this is what an expert who makes vaccines thinks, and it looks to be happening as we speak. Here's the next expert, Dr. Robert Malone, the developer of part of the mRNA technology. He holds patents on this mRNA technology. Quote, the government is not being transparent about the risk. I don't think the benefits outweigh the risk in this particular cohort, talking about the young. But unfortunately, the risk-benefit analysis is not being done. That was June 24th. August 5th, he came back and said the vaccine causes the virus to be more dangerous, talking about the variants. Again, a pro-vaccine developer, Dr. Robert Malone. Next, Dr. Michael Yeadon, former vice president for Pfizer Scientific Development. This guy, Dr. Yeadon, he's retired. He's made millions as VP at Pfizer over the years. He's pro-vaccine. He's taken every vaccine he's been eligible for, minus the COVID one. All his kids have taken all the vaccines they've ever been eligible for, and all his grandkids. Pro-vaccine. Quote, there's absolutely no need for vaccines to extinguish the pandemic. I've never heard such nonsense talk about vaccines. You do not vaccinate people who aren't at risk from a disease. Think college kids. All kids. Remember, kids are more at risk of dying from influenza than COVID. I'll continue with the quote here. You also don't set about planning to vaccinate millions of fit and healthy people with a vaccine that hasn't been extensively tested on human subjects. That was Dr. Michael Yeadon, former vice president for Pfizer Scientific Development and a pro-vaccine guy. Next expert, Dr. Montagnier, Nobel Prize winner. He's a virologist. World's leading authority on viruses. He discovered the HIV virus. Quote, It is an unacceptable mistake, a scientific error, as well as medical error. The history books will show that because it is the vaccination that is creating the variants. And Dr. Peter McCullough, he was on a couple weeks ago, editor of two medical journals, most published cardiologist in the world in his field, quote, the current vaccines are obsolete, unsafe, and unfit for humans. Last quote, this is Dr. Peter Schirmacher, chief pathologist, University of Heidelberg. Again, pro-vaccine. After performing autopsies on 40 people who died within 2 weeks of the vaccination, and I mean, these are just deaths from anything. It just happened to be within 2 weeks of the vaccination. His autopsy reports, he estimates 30 to 40% were due directly from the vaccine and that, quote, the frequencies of fatal consequences of vaccinations are underestimated. And he went on to talk about how we need to shift the funding or get some funding to do a whole lot more autopsies. There's other pathologists stepping up now and being going public with their findings. You know, there was an autopsy that showed the spike protein was embedded in every organ of the body of one patient who passed away. There's a pathologist out of Idaho that said he has seen a 20% uptick in cancer, endometrial cancers, melanomas, and this is from the largest pathology group in the whole state of Idaho. And he tracks these numbers every year, so he's not just kind of estimating off the top of his head. I mean, he keeps a notebook. He keeps a spreadsheet. He is very concerned about the long-term consequences that nobody knows. And that's kind of the point here. So this Dr. Peter Scharmacher, the pathologist, Dr. McCullough, the cardiologist, Dr. Montagnier, the Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Michael Yeadon, Vice President of Pfizer, Dr. Robert Malone, the developer of the mRNA technology, and Dr. Bashi, the former Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation vaccine program guy. These are some pretty big guys.
All the while, CDC said last week that pregnant women can now take the vaccine.
Unbelievable.
Did you hear that one?
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Who would you advise that?
Not at all.
Unbelievable.
I just trying to keep my cool here, Wade. Let me finish this point. So those five or six or seven, however many guys I just quoted, they're way smarter than me. I'm just a family practice guy out here in West Texas doing my thing. Who am I? You know, I was middle of the pack in medical school. I was only voted chief resident residency, not because of my smarts, but because I was the nice guy. So, you know, I'm just a guy. Now I've got some experience, 20 years of being a 19 years since I graduated from medical school. Only doctor in the county. You see a lot of things. You learn to kind of improvise. You learn to do what you got to do to get the job done. And yes, I know how to read the literature. And examine evidence, but more importantly, I know how to use discernment. And that's what I'm seeing more than anything is a lack of discernment. And I don't know if that's because these doctors are being forced to keep quiet or follow protocols, but these NIH CDC protocols that, to be nice, I'll say, are outdated at best. These doctors are just sitting, falling lockstep. Oh, can't go against CDC NIH. Yeah, you can. You took an oath to do no harm and to do all that you can do for your patient. I mean, you have an ethical and moral... I mean, this data has been out for a long time. These quotes, that I'm, just because these quotes aren't on NBC and CNN and NPR or whatever station these guys are listening to, we've got to do our own independent research. I mean, we're called to this. It's just... Anyways... Where I was going with that. So these six, seven experts, can you go find six or seven experts to rebut that? Can Baylor Scott and White, CEO, turn to some doctor in his group that can come up with an argument against the Nobel Prize winner and the inventor of the mRNA and all these guys? Sure. Absolutely. I'm sure they can go find some doctor somewhere and some research scientist somewhere that could argue and rebut these guys. But to say that the debate's done, that it's over, that we have clarity, that this thing is safe and effective, if I hear that one more time, safe and effective. anybody can say safe and effective. And honestly, anyone can grab some data and manipulate it however they want to. And it's part of the reason I wanted Dr. Tyson on, which sounds like he's probably not going to be able to make it with us today. Because what he's told the group, he's in a group text of frontline doctors who are on the front line treating this thing. He's seeing, I think the last stat I saw was about 30% of his urgent care patients are vaccinated. And the ones that have the worst chest x-rays and the worst symptoms are the vaccinated. So his question to the group, is this the beginning of the antibody-dependent enhancement? Is this what we saw with the rat studies, the mice studies over the past 20 years, when you get re-exposed to coronavirus after you've been vaccinated, does it create this exaggerated immune response? That's his question. Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA that I just quoted, he's come out publicly and said, yes, he believes this is. He's seen data signals that he believes are a big warning, a red flag, that this worst-case scenario of antibody-dependent enhancement could be happening. We don't know for sure. Could Robert Malone's opinion be wrong on the data that he's seeing? Yep, it could be. Is he? Does he have some ulterior motive? Is he biased? Does he have some reason to come against these vaccine companies and the CDC and the NIH? Does he have an axe to grind? Did someone, you know, mistreat him or fire him or somehow... you know, get in on his patent and get more or whatever. You know, I don't know Dr. Malone personally. I've spent enough online time. I've done interviews and chats and Zooms with Dr. Brian Tyson and every day getting on these chats with Dr. Ben Marble and these guys. I feel like I know them much more than some of these experts I just quoted. But, yeah, everyone's got a bias and everyone's got opinions. But I honestly believe these guys are out there sounding the warning because they're truly concerned. But like I said, at the very minimum, it's surely debatable. And to coerce a child who has zero risk of dying, John Hopkins said zero kids died from COVID who weren't extremely sick already and had a pre-existing condition like cancer and were on chemotherapy or had some major disease going on. And it was like 280 kids in total during the whole COVID last year died. And they were all pre-existingly sick. So your average healthy college kid has zero risk from COVID, but has definitive risk from the vaccine. It's been well documented. Just the myocarditis, which isn't a light diagnosis, that can have permanent scarring and damage, as Dr. McCullough stated last week. But there have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 kids reported to VAERS that have died. These are 13, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids that were healthy, got this shot without, I believe, informed consent, because all these parents and folks contacting me or that reach out to us in some way, and I tell them, did you know in your informed consent were you told the vaccine will not prevent transmission, it will not prevent you from giving it to your grandma, and they did not know that. They get real wide-eyed. So my big concern is lack of informed consent, coercion, no benefit, all risk. And that's without even talking about the treatments that are available if we need them, which we'll talk about with Dr. Ben Marble after the break here. So I just want to encourage people that we're at a time where, unfortunately, you've got to do your own independent research. You've got to be very careful who's telling you what. And even me, I'm biased. I try to tell people this all the time. I don't probably say it every show or every interview, but I'm definitely biased. You know, over the last 8 years of integrative practice, when you see patients get well, just had one last week. She was checking out at the front desk of our clinic. She sees one of our PAs, and I happened to walk by, and she grabbed me. I'd seen her at her initial visit. Stage 4 ovarian cancer, metastatic lesions to the bone. That's not curable. Chemo typically can extend life a little bit, and that's what her oncologist told her. And so she opted for chemo. But she also opted to do some complementary and alternative things. And her PET scan came back clear after just a few months, three or four months. We'll probably try to get her on the show as a testimony. But the main point I'm making is she told her oncologist, her oncologist called her and gave her the results, and he was astounded. And he said, wow, you're a very unusual case. We don't see this. And I'm going to present you to the tumor board at MD Anderson because it's such a unique case. And I'm paraphrasing here, but basically she told him, do you want to know what I did besides the chemo, the integrative therapies, and my spiritual beliefs, because she believes, number one, Jesus healed her, number two, the complementary and alternative therapies really were beneficial. And the doctor said, well, I don't believe in either one of those, but keep doing what you're doing. There's this disconnect between you know, doctors have been trained just follow protocols from on high. I had a gentleman call me this weekend. One of his good friends is in the ICU, just got intubated. The family wants to do IV vitamin C and ivermectin, and the hospital won't do it because NICDC guidelines and protocols don't call for it. Mayo Clinic doesn't call for it. And these doctors will not budge off of that, even at a patient's request, even with something safer than the Tylenol that they're giving them. It's really unbelievable that we've lost our way this much. And that's why I always quote evidence-based medicine quote. That evidence-based medicine has three components: the published literature, the clinical experience of the doctor, and the patient's wishes, all three. And when it comes to IV vitamin C and ivermectin, you actually have all three. You have the published data. These doctors just haven't seen it. The ones I've talked to. I've talked to an ICU doctor in Boulder, one here locally, and then some out of town. I've been involved in a court hearing down at Baylor Scott and White and Bryan College Station and another one in Dallas. And I unfortunately haven't been able to talk to those ICU doctors, just the attorneys, have to go through the attorneys. And it's really sad. You know, and what I said the other night in my talk was, at the very minimum, guys, let's give these things that the patient's family's requesting, even if you don't believe in them, even if you think there's nothing else to be done or they're not going to help, but just for the sheer fact that you'll give the family a peace of mind that you tried everything they wanted to try. So, anyways, we better take a break. Get Dr. Ben Marble on the line. Y'all hang in there. There's hope. The truth will win in the end. And right now, hold the line. Hold the line on if you... I just got an email this morning from a lady. She wants the prophylactic protocols because her whole family's pressuring her so much. She can't even see her grandkids unless she gets vaccinated. She's 61 years old, has hypertension, I believe she said. And she's very aware of the potential risk. She's aware of the 45,000 deaths that the CDC whistleblowers reported to Attorney Thomas Rentz, who filed a court brief with that affidavit, sworn affidavit, under penalty of perjury, 45,000 deaths within, I think, 3 days of being vaccinated. This lady's aware of that, so she wants to pause, she wants to wait, she wants to is this really, the risk-benefit ratio really favor me? If ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine have data on prophylaxis, maybe I'd rather do that. But she can't see her own grandkids because of this. And it's clear the vaccine doesn't prevent transmission. Anyways, we better get to the break. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're The Cure. VeritasMedical.com is where we keep all these shows archived. Also on iTunes under You're The Cure. When we get back, Dr. Ben Marble with MyFreeDoctor.com will be with us, hopefully. And maybe Brian Tyson will come in later.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. You're the Cure, of course, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, brought to you by VeritasMedical.com. You can check out the website VeritasMedical.com for past archive programs. Also, other important information to help you regain control of your health right there at VeritasMedical.com.
Thank you, Wade. We are back at it here. I want to give people a couple websites they can look at. C19HCQ.com. That stands for hydroxychloroquine. C19HCQ.com. 275 trials. Almost 400,000 patients. And these are trials for early treatment, prophylactic treatment, late treatment, multiple randomized controlled trials on there also. Then you can go to C19Ivermectin.com. And you will see 63 trials, 26,000 plus patients, again, early and prophylactic and late treatment. The data is there. There are doctors on the front line that have been using these therapies, cheap, inexpensive, generic, been around a long time, safety profiles well established, been using them for the better part of this entire pandemic, and we've got one on the line with us, Dr. Ben Marble, nominated for Nobel Peace Prize, actually, just the other day. MyFreeDoctor.com is website. Dr. Marble, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You bet. If you don't mind sharing with the listeners a little bit just about how did you get from what you were doing as a physician to what you're doing now, and then exactly what is it that you're doing now, but a little bit of your journey.
Okay, I can kind of give my back story. I guess I should start. My dad was in the Air Force in the late 60s and was a computer programmer, went to work for IBM when he got out. That was actually before I was born. But I bring that up because I was raised on computers all my life when I was a child on Apples and Macs before they were called Apples and Macs. So really a big computer geek my whole life. And then went to medical school. Went to undergrad at the University of South Alabama. I got a bachelor's degree in biomedical science, minored in chemistry, minored in psychology, and I went to medical school at University of South Alabama and did my residency in family practice there. Got out and realized I really enjoyed ER more than clinics. So I worked in level 4 ERs, small rural ERs all over mainly Mississippi and Alabama for 20 years, and did that for 20 years. And then at the start of this pandemic, I realized pretty early on that Dr. Fauci and the recommendations coming down from CDC, NIH, et cetera, just seemed to be wrong to me. And on March, I think it was March the 18th or 19th, I became the first doctor that I know of to publicly recommend hydroxychloroquine, Zithromax, and zinc for COVID, and told everybody that's what I was going to take. Eventually, other doctors, you know, kind of chimed in on that same line of rationale as far as early treatment. And sort of the way I think of it is this. COVID is a disease of causes inflammation, so anti-inflammatory help. It causes a lot of clotting problems, so anti-clotting drugs help. Of course, any drug with antiviral properties would help treat a virus. So I thought common sense is these some of the simple drugs that have been around that are anti-inflammatory, anti-clotting drugs, drugs like aspirin, Plavix, prednisone, hydroxychloroquine with its anti-inflammatory properties. It seemed common sense that those drugs would help, knowing what we know about the disease. So I just started delivering early treatment because early treatment is the cornerstone of all health care. You always treat every kind of illness. You try to treat it as early as possible. So it's like this weird scenario where the, Dr. Fauci's, I actually call him Dr. Death Fauci because everything he recommends seems to favor death. But, they're recommending all these things that we know don't work. Masks do not work. The simplest explanation for why masks don't work is they don't cover your eyes. You can get COVID in your eyes. So people are just going crazy with all these things that we know don't work. Masks don't work. Social lockdowns don't work. Social distancing doesn't work. And, of course, experimental poisonous vaccines don't work. So, you know, we tried all those things for a year, and that led us to the highest COVID death toll on the planet. So I'm not sure why in the world we would want to keep following those same recommendations so that next year we can still have the highest death toll. So anyway, that's sort of my opinion on that. But what happened to me is I started just delivering early treatment for free, and then it was probably late March or early April I had this strange dream. You know, this is, I was raised in church. We went to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. So I've had dreams about Jesus my whole life. And I had this dream about Jesus that I was talking to Jesus and out of the blue, and Jesus says, you need to start treating your patients for free. And I was like, okay. And I said to Jesus, I said, how am I supposed to treat people for free? I don't own the hospital. You know, sort of like a smart aleck response. Like, I'm not sure how that's supposed to work. And in my dream, Jesus basically said to me, you know, I treated the blind for free, didn't I? He said, I treated the blind for free, didn't I? And so then he laughed in my face, and I woke up. The dream was over, right? So I didn't think too much of it. I thought, okay, there's another weird dream about Jesus talking to me. And, you know, it seems sort of odd. And a week or two later, I'm watching TV. President Trump comes on the television, and he says he wants doctors practicing across state lines, right? So at that moment when the president said he wanted doctors practicing across state lines, I realized I can practice in all 50 states via telemedicine. I can just treat everybody for free. So it was sort of a eureka moment, the combination of that dream I had and then the president saying that we were allowed to practice in all 50 states. So I just started doing it. What happened is most doctors, there's a divide in America now with physicians. There's what I call falsy doctors. You know, this is the Super Bowl of healthcare, and most doctors sit on the sidelines. They're the falsy doctors. They don't treat COVID patients. If you get COVID, they'll tell you, don't come see me, go to the ER. If you're, you know, if you're dying, you can't breathe, go to the ER. Otherwise, I'm not going to give you any treatment. So that's why I call them falsy doctors. You know, we take the Hippocratic Oath to first do no harm. Well, refusing treatment when you know there's good treatment, maybe some of these doctors aren't aware. If they're not aware, then they need to do their job and research it. But there is good treatment, and my free doctor, we're the simple proof. You know, we've delivered over 42,000 free doctor consults now. We've treated approximately 20,000 acute COVID cases with early treatment at home with these multiple drug combinations we use of these low-cost generic drugs. And we've had an approximate survival rate of 99.98%. So I know early treatment works. We've been doing this in the thousands, and our patients are alive. They, 99.98% of our patients survive, and then they're thankful, and they write us nice letters about how grateful they are. So I know it works. So people who want randomized controlled trials for this or that, you don't do that during the middle of a pandemic. That you can't. You can't have trials that don't exist to navigate how you treat people at that time in the middle of a pandemic. I would bring up another thing about pandemics. Never a good idea to do mass vaccination during a pandemic. Any virologist, immunologist, infectious disease specialist knows this. This is normal good medicine. You don't do mass vaccinations during a pandemic. Well, for some reason, Dr. Death Falsey decided to do mass vaccinations during the pandemic when he knew it was a bad idea. Now, no surprise, we have the Delta variant. People don't understand the Delta variant was caused because of the vaccines. I call them vaccines. Why? Well, the manufacturers, they called it the software of life. They also called it gene therapy. Then they did some focus groups and realized patients didn't like those names. So then they decided, hey, let's rename them vaccines. Well, they're not traditional vaccines in any sense of the word. But lo and behold, the Marxists who controlled defining of words redefined the word vaccine to include this poison. So it's this weird scenario that we're in now, because when they tested all of these mRNA genetic vaccines on the rats and ferrets, the majority of the animals died. They didn't die at first. They died when they got their subsequent exposure to coronavirus, which what a lot of people don't realize, you know, cold season. Cold season should also be called coronavirus season. And so what the fear is that all these people who have currently been hacked, which is almost half the planet now, I saw some numbers the other day that over 3 billion doses have allegedly been given already, which basically means we've got a new two-class planet. We have the hacked and the unhacked. And we're getting a lot of buyer's remorse from the people who got hacked. They didn't know what they were signing up for. They didn't realize they were getting gene therapy that, you know, permanently alters your genes. Well, I would make an argument that if something alters your genes, that means you're a mutant. I mean, that's the literal definition of the word mutant or mutation, you know, altering of the DNA. Now, of course, the people who are in favor of these, they're like, oh, it might only alter 1% of your DNA. Well, that still changes your DNA. Even if it's a tenth of 1%, that's still a change, and you don't know what the long-term outcome is going to be of that. So it's really, you know, if you look at the science of it, it looks like the antibody-dependent enhancement is probably going to cause overwhelming autoimmune disorders in these people, and I expect the majority of the people who've been hacked are going to die in the next 2 to 3 years. That's what I personally think is going to happen. I think they're all going to die, and they're oblivious to what's going on. They're walking dead people, and the problem is half the planet is walking dead people now that have been hacked. So how do you undo that? I don't know, but, you know, if you look at it, the people who've been hacked, they already cannot donate convalescent plasma. Most of them probably have no idea about that. You try to go to Red Cross, you can't donate plasma. I think it's inevitable that it's going to eventually, they're going to not be able to donate blood. They're going to not be able to donate organs, won't be able to donate eggs, sperm. So it's going to make this two-class society where the value of unhacked people's blood and organs is going to go through the roof because we now have the clean, unpure, untainted organs and blood that the hacks do not have. So it's going to create a weird dynamic as far as blood supplies, organ supplies go. And Fauci and the CDC, these people that have not even thought through all this, right? So they're destroying our whole world, basically, and society in general and our whole healthcare system. They're just messing it up in ways that are going to cause unforetold, unforeseen, you know, long-term consequences. So it's really a frightening prospect, because if I'm right about this kill shot theory, yeah, the idea is that the billionaire elite control are those who are making all these record profits right now selling these vaccines. They've publicly stated they want to cull the human herd. Their long end goal population is half a billion people, which means 7 billion people have to die. So it certainly seems to me that all the science suggests that's what's going on right now. It's mass genocide, that's intentional genocide. They're designed these kill shots to kill people slowly over 2 to 3 years, and so therefore their death can be blamed on anything else. Oh, it's the variants. It's not the vaccine. It's the unvaxxed people. So, you know, when dealing with the Marxists, and call it the techno-crazy, because it's like a weird new form of Marxism, everything they do or say is the opposite of reality. The Patriot Act was unpatriotic. The Unaffordable Care Act, unaffordable. Now these vaccines, they're fake vaccines. They're not. They don't seem to be vaccines at all. We've already had over 40,000 deaths from the CDC's own numbers. You know, what's crazy about that is if the drugs were FDA approved, if they have only 25 deaths, they have to be pulled off the market. Well, These are not FDA approved, as you know. They're EUA authorized only, emergency use authorization only. And the only reason they were able to get that was because there was no approved treatment. If there were approved treatment, like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, then they would have to cancel the EUA. So that's why they keep bad-mouthing these low-cost, cheap drugs, because they can't make a lot of money off of them. So it seems like every decision they make is designed to maximize death and make the billionaires more money. And you got people like Bill Gates, George Soros, the Rockefellers, these types of people. They've all publicly stated this in the open. That's what they want the long-term global population to be, 500 million. You got Bill Gates doing a TED talk about how he's going to use vaccines to reduce global population by 1 billion people, which at the time everybody was like, what's he talking about? Vaccines don't reduce population. Well, maybe Bill knew something that we didn't, that the vaccines were designed to kill everybody. Because that's sure what it seems like to me, having read the thousands and thousands and thousands of articles I've read over the past year and a half on all these things. And that's the big picture conclusion I have come to. Is that this is intentional mass genocide, and Dr. Death Falsey is the mad scientist who's behind it all, which basically, you know, we already know he paid to have COVID-19 created in the Wuhan lab. That's easily proven, right? Okay, so there have been 200 million people who died from that, right? So that makes him the biggest mass murderer in the history of the world. He makes Hitler look like an amateur, you know. So that's sort of my overall big picture opinion of it. Fauci belongs in prison, and he needs to be arrested as soon as possible, as does Bill Gates and George Soros and several other people. Because what's happening is this is all designed as a takeover of America. This is an attempted Marxist takeover of America. They're trying to overthrow our government. The Marxists are in control of all the alphabet organizations now. They control the FBI, the CIA, the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, World Health Organization. We've got Marxists controlling the White House, and they control Congress. So the picture is pretty grim looking right now, because they're about to force these kill shots on our soldiers starting September 15th. So to me, that's the deadline we have to stop this by. If we can't stop it before then, if they're kill shots and they give it to every soldier, guess what? Our military's dead. Game over. America's dead, right? Well, we saw what just happened in Kabul and Afghanistan just fell. Thanks to Biden's dementia kicking in. You know, that's another issue. I went to the White House before the election, and I told everybody in the world, I'm at the White House. Joe Biden has dementia. Do not put him here. It's very obvious the man has dementia. Every doctor in America knows Joe Biden has dementia. So that brings up another issue. Dementia Joe. This is an issue for the media. When is the media going to do something about the elder abuse of Dementia Joe? Because it's very clear that the man has no clue what's going on. He's a puppet, and his handlers basically just tell him what to do. That's elder abuse, as far as I'm concerned. Not that he doesn't deserve it with his past history, but you know, he probably should be in Gitmo as well. But he clearly has pretty significant dementia and has no business being in the White House. So we have to have mass protests in the street. We have to have people calling their Congress people opposing the vaccine. One, this has to stop. We have to stop giving poison to people. We can't be giving pregnant women poison that kills their baby, you know. And that's so many people are oblivious to how many deaths are going on. It's like, I want to ask people that are pro-vaccine, how many deaths do you pull these experimental poisons off the market, right? Because we're over 21,000 on VAERS, and the Euro system has over 21,000. So their official numbers is over 40,000 deaths so far. So at what number do you say, okay, you're right, this is poison? Is it 100,000 deaths? Is it 1 million deaths? Because historically it's 25 deaths. They should have already been pulled. But the problem is we have Marxists in control of all the organizations, and they refuse to follow the rules. So I don't know how we get it other than mass protests in the streets and people, demanding that this stop, because I myself have not recommended a single dose of the vaccine for a single patient. In December, I came out, what I was taught in residency was very simple. Don't recommend any new drug until it's been out for 5 years, because you don't know what the long-term effects are going to be until it's actually on the market for a while. And then, you know, the perfect example, thalidomide. Thalidomide in the late 60s, they gave to pregnant women to seemed to be a great drug, and then all of a sudden, all these women started having babies born without arms and legs, right? Well, thalidomide killed, affected around 10,000 people, and they pulled it off the market once they made the connection, because it took 9 months to a year before they figured it all out. Well, these vaccines, the vaccines, they've already killed way more people than thalidomide. Why are they still on the market? Corruption, greed and corruption. We have evil, greedy people in control, and they don't care if you die. In fact, they want you to die. They want all of us to die. They're trying to kill all of us, and the sooner people wake up and realize that, the better off we're going to be. Even if we stop the vaccines tomorrow, then we still have the problem that half the population on the planet has already had them, and it appears that we're going to have the greatest mass die. You know, if three billion people have already had them, and 3 billion people die in the next 2 years because of it, that will be the greatest mass die-off in human history. We've never had that many people all die in such a short time span. So that will overwhelm all hospitals, healthcare systems, and just cause mass chaos and unrest. So I don't know how we solve that problem. But, you know, we're just trying to do what we can to help people, and that's why I just started treating people for free. I wanted to try and do my part to help as many people as we could during the crisis. And so, you know, I'll back up to my story because I kind of got off track, but, you know, I went to, a year ago, went up to, I heard about Stella Emanuel and them speaking out in public, and so I contacted them, and I went up to America's Frontline Doctors event in October at the Supreme Court, and I did an interview with One American News, and within a week I had 1,000 new patients. So I quickly realized I have to recruit other doctors to do this, to make this a viable concept long term. I'm just one doctor. I can't do this all by myself. So I started recruiting other doctors, and we had other doctors joining the team. I eventually got to the 50th state, and because I was trying to make sure I was able to treat in all 50 states. And I got to the 50th state, which was Rhode Island, on December 31st of 2020. I had COVID at the time. I was taking the outpatient treatment, and I was so excited about getting my 50th state. I got a little cocky. I stopped my own treatment like day 5 or 6. I was feeling so much better. I thought I had beaten COVID, and I got overconfident and stopped my meds. And then a few days later, it bounced back, and I got really, really sick and wound up in the hospital for a day. But I eventually beat it and recovered, but it slowed down my recovery. Just, you know, doctors are horrible patients, and so I foolishly, and I mentioned that because I tell my patients now, ever since then, you know, if you're feeling better towards the end of the first week, don't stop your meds. Just keep taking them. You're really not out of the woods until you've made it to the third week. That first 2 weeks, especially the second week, a lot of people wind up in the hospital the second week, not too much the first week, but. Yeah. So I learned from that experience. I survived. We recruited other doctors. On Easter Sunday, we passed our 10,000th consult delivered, and we're probably going to pass 50,000 consults delivered here by the end of the month. And we're getting to a point now where we're starting to try and onboard a lot more physicians. We want to give doctors an off-ramp because we have a lot of doctors that are sitting on the sidelines. You know, like you said, this is the healthcare Super Bowl of our lifetimes. And 90% of doctors in America have sat on the sidelines the whole time. They've been faulty doctors. They refuse to treat COVID patients. They, nope, I don't treat COVID. Like, well, you're not really a doctor, are you? You're a falsy doctor. You're a fake doctor. Maybe you should go ahead and retire or go be a lawyer or do something different. So we have these falsy doctors, and it's a simple, every patient, it's really important for the patients to understand whether you live or die really depends on what doctor you choose. If you choose a free doctor that's actually open to using good treatments that work, your odds of survival are going to go way up. If you choose a falsy doctor, your odds of survival are going to go way down. And there's a simple test every person can know whether their doctor is a falsy doctor or not. One, ask them what they'll do if you get COVID. If their response is, oh, I'll write you some prescriptions of XYZ, then that sounds like a reasonable doctor. If their response is, don't come to my office and go to the ER if you're dying, well, that sounds like a falsy doctor. Also, the second thing, do they favor poisonous vaccines? If they favor, they won't treat you when you have COVID, and they favor you taking poison, that's a falsy doctor. You need to find a new doctor as soon as possible. Never go see that doctor again. This is what I would tell people. So Now, but the problem we have now is we have all these doctors that they have Marxist overlords in charge of their job because of the Obamacare system and, you know, the whole nightmare that Obamacare created. And it's destroyed healthcare, really. It really has. And the average person doesn't understand all that. But, you know, when it's been bad ever since Obamacare, and everything's just gotten worse and worse and worse. Now it's just to the point where everybody realizes all the physicians are out of it. They want to leave because they don't, you know, majority of physicians have not been vaccinated because the doctors know this is experimental poison. They don't want to take it, but they're going to get fired if they don't take it. So we're trying to provide an off-ramp for those doctors that, you know, they want to be able to make an income, come work for the free doctor team. We can give you a job prescribing in all 50 states across America. You can be a doctor however you want to be. As long as you don't favor experimental poison, I'm fine with letting doctors be doctors, and you get paid. We let doctors starting pay for our physicians is you keep 50% of your donations you receive. So, for example, we had a doctor last month. She got over 60,000 in donations, so she made 30 grand last month. That's the kind of numbers we're talking about. You can actually make as much, if not more, money treating patients for free as a physician than you can working for the broken, falsy doctor system.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the good news I'm trying to let doctors be aware of. Because once doctors find out about this, we're going to have a lot more doctors joining our team. We've got around 25 doctors on the team right now. We're working on some things, getting a new server, a new app that they're supposed to debut later this month, and I'm waiting for that. And once that happens, we're going to be onboarding new physicians as fast as we can because the need is very great. There's, you know, we're probably averaging 1,000 patients a day right now and can't keep up with the demand.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing across the board. There's a couple other telemedicine services. I know Dr. Stella's got one, Emmanuel. And same thing. Everybody I hear from doing telemedicine is they're overwhelmed. Out of the almost 50,000 patients, how many have died that you're aware of that y'all have treated?
Only four.
Four out of 50,000. Guys, the message is early outpatient treatment. Keep the people out of the hospital.
Yes, and I have my little story. I made up a joke for it. I call it ET, ET's early treatment. I tell people we deliver ET for free via MFD. A little slogan. And it's early treatment. It's making a joke about early treatment. And the point is, early treatment works. It does save lives. It is the foundation of all healthcare, early treatment. So if a doctor opposes early treatment, you should think, okay, something's wrong with this doctor. Think of it like this. How can we reduce hospitalizations if we don't treat patients until after hospitalization? That makes no sense at all.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things that haven't made sense this whole time. As you've already talked about the mask, there's no, if you put all the evidence for and against mask on a scale, it definitely tips hard on the side of no evidence for wearing masks. Same thing for social distancing. Put the evidence on both sides, it tips hard towards the side of it does more harm than good. Of course, the outpatient therapies that have been suppressed or at the most or at the minimum just not advertised. I mean, there should be billboards and flyers, I said at the top of the show, dropped from airplanes about this. So just that fact alone, that we haven't repented and confessed for our missteps all along the way, that's a big red flag. You know, a lot of what Dr. Marvel said in this 30 minutes is a shock to people if they're new listeners to our program, or even if they're old listeners, it could be a shock depending on where you get your news. I would encourage you to go do your own independent research, come to your own conclusions. He's a doctor who's come to some conclusions that maybe you don't agree with, but maybe you just haven't been exposed to some of this, so go do your research. And second, I want to say I think this highlights the fact that there is, at the minimum, robust debate on both sides. And when there's robust debate, how can we try to mandate a new experimental emergency authorized medical therapy on a kid or a pregnant woman or on anybody? I'm involved in the United Airlines pilots. Temporary restraining order was just filed on Friday evening. I wrote an affidavit in support of that, as did Dr. Peter McCullough. We'll see what they do. But I've got doctors calling me from Baylor Scott & White system that they've told me they're going to walk. If they have to do it, they'll do it. They'll walk. I actually sent them your website, Dr. Marvel, with those numbers that you're talking about. But myfreedoctor.com, is that the way people get a hold of you, or if they need early outpatient treatment and their doctor won't do it?
Yes, sir, and we'll prescribe in all 50 states, and we will, you know, get the patients the early treatment they need. And, you know, we do focus on the acutely ill first. So some people want prophylactic care, and each day once we get our acute care patients caught up, then we go to the people wanting prophylactic care. So it can be a delay of a day or two before you, you know, sometimes even maybe 3 days, or when we had a server crash problem recently and other things. So sometimes there can be delays, but specifically for those who are acutely ill, if you haven't heard back from us, message us every 12 hours. Anybody can email me, benmarblemd@myfreedoctor.com, and we want to make sure we get all the acutely ill treated first and see their needs, but also we can, you know, get prescriptions for prophylactic meds as well. To the people. So that's what, you know, what we're doing, trying to save as many lives as we can is the bottom line.
Yeah, well, I appreciate what you're doing. I know there's a lot of patients out there who appreciate what you're doing. It's awful that there's people emailing, calling our office all the time, and obviously we can't handle them all either, just simply because their doctors aren't treating. And again, I think docs, come on. There's been enough evidence now, enough time. And
get in the game. In the game. That would be my message to doctors across America, is get in the game, because so many doctors are not in the game, which means the few doctors like you and I who are, we're just all, every pre-doctor I know is just overworked, works every day pretty much, you know, so that's just what happens. But the other thing I would say is about the censorship's out of control. Like I was mentioning about, you know, I went to the White House with Stella Emanuel, and we mentioned about Joe Biden having dementia, and I uploaded that video to YouTube. This is before the election. What did they do, of course? They deleted it. They censored it. So the censorship's out of control. And this is where the lawyers can help out, because we need to sue, and I know a lot of people are already with Trump is about the lack of free speech online. This is just crazy. This is not America anymore. We don't have freedom anymore. They've taken it away. I've been silenced on every website. I've been kicked off Twitter 3 times, Facebook. I've been in Facebook jail for forever now. And it's, you know, every time you say something that doesn't toe the CDC line, they censor you. So this is, you know, 1984 was supposed to be a warning, not an instruction manual. And ironically, Dr. Beth Fauci started working for NIH in 1984, and now he's pushing all these Big Brother policies, claims he's science and all this. It's just, he's the literal definition of a mad scientist is that man. And the sooner he gets out of office, the better off the world will be, because, you know, a lot of people are dying. So we have to do whatever we can to try and stop that. You know, what we do is deliver the early treatment, but somebody needs to stop this fake vaccination program that's killing everybody. Because we can save people with early treatment, but it's much harder to save you if you took poison beforehand. If you take, you know, arsenic before you go get the known treatment, you know, treatment for strep throat, the Amoxil. Well, if you take arsenic before you get strep throat, then yeah, sure, the Amoxil may kill the strep throat, but you're still going to die from the arsenic poisoning. This is the way I try to explain this to people. Imagine Fauci has a new arsenic vaccine. Are you going to take the new arsenic vaccine just because he says it's safe? I'm not.
Well, that's Wade Wilkes in the background. Right. He's really enjoying you, Dr. Marble.
It's been a great show.
I'm going to wrap it up here. Here's a quote. Here's a quote from the American Medical Association, which I'm not a member of anymore. I used to be. But the American Medical Association Code of Medical Ethics, quote, "While a physician's role tends to focus on diagnosing and treating illness once it occurs, physicians also have a professional commitment to prevent disease and promote health and well-being for their patients and the community," end quote. That's where we're at. And I think Dr. Marble, almost 50,000 patients now and 4 deaths, and Dr. Brian Tyson's out there, and Dr. Stella Emanuel and others with the same kind of statistics. It's time for doctors to look to these guys, call them up. They'd be happy to visit with you, docs, if you're out there listening. We can make a big impact on these folks because, again, we're high-risk communities. Standard Americans are metabolically unfit. We're sitting ducks. If you're older and you have chronic disease, or even if you're younger and have obesity and chronic disease, you're a sitting duck. But there's obvious treatments, as I mentioned earlier in the program, it's like a pediatrician refusing to give an asthmatic kid albuterol and steroid. If we don't give those kids the early treatment, they will end up in the ICU also. So let's get out there, guys. Spread the word. Thank you, Dr. Ben Marble. MyFreeDoctor.com is where you can find him and all his doctors that are providing telemedicine services across all 50 states. Dr. Marble, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Edwards. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. We appreciate you, sir. Look forward to having you back real soon anytime. And I did post a link of My Free Doctor on my Facebook page. Have a lot of followers there, so people can go check that out. But MyFreeDoctor.com, what an excellent place resource for everybody. And thank you, Doctor, for providing that for people.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate everything you guys are doing. We all have to work as a team.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good show. Thank you again for bearing with us today on You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Again, the show will be uplinked, be uploaded at veritasmedical.com. If you want to check that out, we'll get the whole program once again, veritasmedical.com.